Simon Hammond, the health minister, has brought me in chocolate.
I have, Stephen. Good
Are
morning.
Are you trying to kill me?
No, I know that was far. That was the last thing in my mind. I was. I know a man of your integrity couldn't be bribed by a couple of bars of chocolate. I brought you two different ones. I wasn't sure whether you wanted, whether you were a big child like me and preferred Milky Bar or Galaxy, which is another one that I'm, maybe shouldn't mention these brand names, of course, on the BBC.
I think I want them both. Let's get into your manifesto because there is quite a lot in here. So what have the DUP to say for yourself, Simon? Vote for us, more of the same. Top dogs at Stormont. Great success story, has it been?
Well, look, I don't think anybody, least of all me, would come on and say that Stormont is perfect. Obviously, it had been a very, very challenging term with around 2 years of the term focused very much on the issue of welfare reform and trying to sort issues with it around. But that doesn't mean that it hasn't been a successful term and that devolution hasn't delivered for people in Northern Ireland. We still have the lowest household taxes in the whole of the UK. We have brought in 40,000 more jobs into Northern Ireland, which is the highest jobs attracted and promoted in Northern Ireland than at any time in our history. We still have the best education and exam results in the whole of the UK. We've invested more than £500 million more in health and social care and employed 1,200 more nurses and 275 more consultants. So there are a range of things where we have done well.
Do those jobs include zero-hour contracts?
Well, I don't know the exact breakdown of the contracts, the hours, the pay and all of
that. Well, that would be important, wouldn't it? If within that 40,000 figure, I don't know if quite a few of them are or not, but if they're zero-hour contracts and they're not real jobs, are they?
Well, zero-hour contracts are part of the employment landscape. I know there have been some issues around zero-hour contracts. I think more the issues around exclusivity within zero-hour contracts or within contracts where somebody has a zero-hour contract but can't go and do work elsewhere. And the Assembly has debated this issue in the past. There are some people for whom zero-hour contracts suit them.
Would the DUP ban them?
No, we think that there are some examples where I can remember actually as a student myself when I was working to help to put myself through university that I had a contract. At a time I had a contract which was 0 hours and you picked up work when you could get it. So there are some people for whom, particularly likes of students, where 0 hour contracts are helpful.
Huge difference, Simon, in a 0 hour contract as a student and you're in your 30s, your 40s, a family, your kids are going out to school and you don't know whether you're working that day and you've got an exclusivity clause where you can't work for anyone else. Would the DUP ban exclusivity clauses in zero-hour contracts?
I don't think zero-hour contracts are ideal in any way, shape or form. I think that they were perhaps a product in terms of they've been there for a while. They have perhaps increased in numbers in more recent years as a result of instability within the labour market.
But not ideal. Doesn't create policy. So what I'm trying to get from every politician that sits in front of me is specific ideas around policy so people know what they're voting for.
Yeah.
Would the DUP ban exclusivity within zero-hour contracts?
I think it's certainly something that we should be looking at and carefully. I think
Two minutes in.
I would rather say that we would like to take the time to look at these issues carefully.
How many years do you want?
We've had some debate. There was some debate in a piece of legislation that went through towards the end of the Assembly term. It wasn't a good time to have that sort of debate. Happy to have that debate again. But in terms of...
So the answer, Simon, is you don't know.
In terms of the DUP, doesn't know. In terms of the 40,000 jobs that
I'm asking about zero-hour contracts and exclusivity. Is it fair for me to say that already, 2016, you've had the debate, all of that malarkey, you don't know. The DUP doesn't know its policy on zero-hour contracts or exclusivity within them.
I think particularly with exclusivity, I've made the point around 0 hours contracts that there are some people within our labour for whom it suits. And it's not just students. There may be others as well for whom that suits. And I don't think we want to, in trying to solve one issue or one problem, and I think this is something with right across public policy, if you might see a problem and you identify it and you say, well, that might, if we ban that or stop that, that will solve that problem, but it might create another problem somewhere else for somebody else. So I think we need to carefully consider all of these issues. And around the issue of exclusivity, I think it is something that we would be deeply concerned about and would be content to look at legislation that might outlaw that. In terms of the 40,000...
Might outlaw it. This is not policy. When you stand in front of the electorate, surely what we want this morning, Simon, is what the DUP would do. Not might do, not would look at, not set up a commission to maybe do it and then politicians never do it. You should have had the debate before now. If you're standing trying to get a vote, people want to know what they're voting for, not what they're maybe voting for. Is that not fair?
Well, I think that's fair enough. But I think also the public want their politicians to have mature debate to reflect on all of the issues, all of the factors, and not make policy up on the basis of what one aspect of the argument is. I think people want us to look at whether it's zero-hour contracts or other aspects of employment law, whatever it might be, to consider all of these all of the facts. And just, but on the 40,000 jobs, and you were asking about the level of pay that people were, around 72% of those jobs were above the Northern Ireland public sector median. So these are good jobs that are coming into Northern Ireland. We want to attract more jobs. Part of Arlene's 5-point plan for Northern Ireland is to create 50,000 more jobs for Northern Ireland, but not just more jobs, but also higher paying jobs as well.
You mentioned Arlene Foster, our new First Minister in Northern Ireland, became First Minister in January.
Yes.
When she said she was, quote, tired of Stormont being a watchword for arguing and bickering, she said she wanted to change the political culture, find a new way of doing business, one that places a greater premium on consensus than on conflict. The DP has been the biggest assembly party for the last 9 years. Bickering and conflict is what you do with your political opponents, is it not?
Well, look, yes, you have disagreements. Of course, you have disagreements. That's the nature of public debate, public discourse. I think what Arlene was getting at and what she was saying was a reflection on particularly the sort of period between 2013-2015, where Stormont was in difficulties around the issue of welfare reform, and because of the irresponsibility of Sinn Féin and the SDLP on that issue, Stormont was on the brink, and Stormont was close to collapse on more than one occasion. And I think we want to get away from, and I mean, this is something that you don't have to be out on the doors too long during an election time to get that coming back from people, where people say, well, look, we want you to get on with doing the job.
And but since welfare reform was different, wasn't it? Because that was
a very serious issue. I mean, you and I debated it.
It was absolutely serious. My goodness, this programme did it nearly every day from memory. But that was a fundamental difference in policy between political parties. And some people might say, look, fair enough. You all needed to fight that out. But it's when the bickering is deliberate and is it necessary. For example, when Arlene Foster says she's tired of Stormont being a watchword for arguing and bickering and wants to change the political culture, how can she say that with curry my yoghurt and all of that scenario? Is that really mature politics, standing up with a yoghurt pot? Curry my yoghurt, mocking the Irish language? Is that the type of thing Arlene Foster is talking about?
Look, I think we all want to see on all sides, and look, I think we could get into other examples of pointing at what people have said that maybe wasn't
the choice
of words.
Let's talk
about your party. Yeah, but I'm trying to make the point that not everybody chooses the words that all of us would want to use from time to time.
So was curry my yoghurt regretful?
Well, you know, Gregory said it.
Regrettable.
Gregory said what he said. It was words that perhaps I wouldn't have chosen to use. But I think the point that he was making around the Irish language was a fair point.
Was curry my yoghurt regrettable?
No, I think,
or do you stand over it?
The issue around, you asked a question about bickering at Stormont, about the language that we use in public discourse at Stormont. I mean, I think I, like everybody in Northern Ireland, want to see us move away, because we know the troubled past that we had. We know how that infected our politics. We know how that infected our political discourse. And there are, you know, that still is with us today to a degree, a lesser degree, thankfully, because we've made huge progress in the last 10 years. But we have a long way to go. And I think that what Arlene was reflecting on in her comments was a very difficult time in the politics of Northern Ireland, where, yes, we did disagree over welfare reform. Mm. It was a very, very serious issue. And you're right in saying that it's fair enough for political parties to have that debate and discussion if they do have fundamental differences. I think the difficulty at that time was it became an issue that did bring Stormont to the brink. We were close to collapse on several occasions. And as a result of that, then public discourse in Northern Ireland was probably not as good as it should have been.
That's a good job you've done, Simon, because the last minute and a half, you've come away from my question, because there are people within both communities, but indeed who support the Irish language in Northern Ireland, who thought that what your party was doing was sticking two fingers up to them with Gregory's curry my yoghurt antics. It was basically saying, we're going to use the power that we have as a political party to mock your language. What? Now, again, I repeat the question. was that regrettable?
Well, you know, I think the
or
point,
do you stand over it?
The point that
is that, some, this is that is, what we can expect from the DUP?
This was some time ago, and not an issue related to the manifesto, of course. But it was some time ago. Gregory made the point that he made because of particular circumstances in the chamber on that day, which had, I think, exasperated many of us who, you know, have to listen to. Not the Irish language per se being used, but being used as a reason to use up time in the chamber, and then it feeds into a wider concern that there is about the prevalence of the Irish language and culture over and above other cultures.
So we can expect more of that from the DUP.
No, look, people will themselves choose to use language. I will use language in certain issues that others maybe wouldn't use, that you wouldn't use, and vice versa. We will stand up for what we believe in, and we will do that robustly.
Your manifesto talks about better working relationships at Stormont in recent months.
Yes.
We're told the executive has performed much more efficiently since the Fresh Start Agreement.
Yeah.
So you have an improved, stable relationship with Sinn Féin now, do you?
Well, I think there has been a marked change and a noticeable change, although probably noticeable because in the fact that we haven't been in the headlines in the way that maybe we have previous, before that, in sort of coming on to your show and other shows in this studio, where we have been arguing and bickering, to use that word again. We have been getting our heads down and getting the job done. And I think that shows that in spite of the differences, and there are differences, in spite of those differences, there are a huge swathe of issues upon which there can be agreement at executive level. The parties, when they get their heads down and focus on those issues, and coming off the back of the Fresh Start Agreement last November, we have got our head down and we have made progress in a substantial range of issues.
So is it fair to say you've now got a better relationship with Sinn Féin?
Well, I think there is always going to be difficulties in that relationship because of the past, because of differences of opinion on things in the present as well. But I think what we have shown since the Fresh Start Agreement, and unfortunately there was very limited time between that and the end of the Assembly term to continue that good working output and product from the Assembly and from the Executive. But I think we have shown, and we showed before the issue of welfare reform caused problems, that we are able to get things done, and that goes back to the issues around.
I'm going to start comfort eating with that chocolate if you keep dodging my questions. Have you a better relationship with Sinn Féin since Fresh Start? Yes, I think perhaps I was a bit long on my answer,
but yes, there is a better relationship because we have resolved the issues around paramilitarism, which obviously came up in the summer, and we've resolved issues around welfare reform as well.
Well, I want to ask you about the IRA, actually, because last August, and that's what you were referring to there, after the police linked IRA members to the Kevin McGuigan murder in Belfast, the DUP said Sinn Féin should be kicked out of the executive. What changed?
Well, if you go back again, we spoke at this at the time and subsequently in great length, and there were clear problems and issues emanating from the murder of Kevin McGuigan, particularly when the Chief Constable said what he said.
And the DUP said Sinn Féin should be kicked out of the executive. Yeah. Well, what changed? What created the U-turn from the DUP?
Whenever you have a situation where the Chief Constable of Northern Ireland stands up and says what he said, and whenever you have, and I know you won't want to get into issues around arrests and so forth, but whenever you had some of the things that happened subsequent to that caused difficulties and infected the political process, I think it was only right that we did take that seriously. And we didn't take that very, very seriously, and indeed our response to that was criticised by some, and I was on your show in response to some of that criticism back in the autumn time. But you know, there was the issue of welfare reform, there was issues around balanced budgets. We brought this issue.
No, this was specifically. We called for Sinn Féin to be excluded because of the IRA.
We brought this issue of paramilitarism because of circumstances, because of events. We brought it onto the political agenda, and it formed part of the talks process last autumn. And I'm glad that we were able to resolve all of those issues, and including the issue of paramilitarism, where we have got the biggest, strongest statement ever in respect of condemnation of paramilitarism. We have got a whole raft of issues. So we have a whole raft of measures, everything from a statement of principles which every party has signed up to, which will go into the pledge of office.
You're doing it again.
Border. Sorry, I'm trying to answer your question.
Last August, just last August, not even a year ago, just a few months ago, Simon, the DUP was calling for Sinn Féin to be excluded.
Here's what Nigel Dodd said last August, just to remind you and everyone else, we were on the basis of events, Stephen, and I'm happy to say,
I'm asking you what's changed. I'm asking you what's changed. Here's what Nigel Dodd said last August.
Well, we are already set out our position that we have met the Chief Constable. We'll be having further meeting with the Chief Constable. We're meeting the Secretary of State tomorrow, and we have asked for an urgent meeting with the Prime Minister. And we're putting it up very clearly to them and to other parties that Sinn Féin are clearly in breach of their commitment to peaceful, exclusively peaceful and democratic means. They should be the ones that are punished. They're the ones that should be excluded. And that's where the action should be taken. That's the people who should be punished. Those are the people who should be out of the executive. If they fail to do that, then we're in a different situation, and we will take whatever action is necessary at that stage to ensure that the integrity of government in Northern Ireland is preserved and maintained.
Here's what Arlene Foster said a few days later.
Well, we believe that Sinn Féin should be excluded. We believe there's enough evidence there to exclude Sinn Féin. However, we recognise that the exclusion mechanism that is in currently the legislation will not work because it needs cross-community support, and the SDLP and Sinn Féin are not going to support that. I have no idea why the SDLP wouldn't support it, but that's a matter for them.
So for those people, you see, Simon Hamilton, who heard that last August and thought this is the DUP standing up to Sinn Féin, robustly saying, nope, we want them out of the executive, this is a step too far. What reassured you since then?
Well, if you go back to then, so you've taken a couple of comments, a couple of quotes from August of last year, from August, September of last year.
Two of your most senior people.
Yes, and they were in response to events that were happening at that time, which was a brutal murder on the streets of Belfast. Which the Chief Constable then had came forward and said he believed that members of the Provisional IRA were involved in. And as you recall, that plunged the political process, it plunged the executive and everything into crisis at that time. And we responded to that. We responded to that by the actions that we took as a party. We also responded to that by putting this issue of paramilitarism at the top of the agenda for the talks process.
You responded by asking for Sinn Féin to be excluded.
We did.
And is it still your preferred option that they're excluded?
Clearly, any party who is associated to any paramilitary organisation that is committing murder on our streets or other criminal activity has no place in the executive.
Well, the police never said Sinn Féin was committing anything.
But there was, but
if, or indeed
if you go,
the IRA.
If you go back,
members.
Well, again, I don't want to get into, I'm sure, well, you'll stop me from getting into some of the issues that then subsequently happened after what the Chief Constable said in terms of arrests, which did take this issue to the heart of Sinn Féin. We did take
these comments were made before the arrests.
Yes, I know, but you're trying to take just the comments and not this, anything subsequent to that.
What I'm trying
happened.
To establish is, but were you politicking? Were you saying we want Sinn Féin excluded when you never meant it? And history would show you didn't pursue it.
We didn't follow through, and that's what I'm trying to get to. And if you let me do that, I'll try my best. We did take it seriously. We were rightly criticised for our response, as you will recall, to how we took it seriously. There was an independent assessment was carried out that concluded that Republicans were committed to the peace process and had a wholly political focus.
The Chief Constable said that at the time.
But we didn't want to rely just on that. That was useful information. That was helpful. We didn't want to rely on that because there is no place for paramilitaries in our society, never mind associated with the political parties who are in government. And what we got coming out of the Fresh Start Agreement was the strongest, most comprehensive package ever in respect of dealing with paramilitarism. Not just a statement of principles, which Sinn Féin and all other parties who were party to the agreement signed up to. That's going to go into the Pledge of Office. But there is a cross-border joint agency task force to deal with cross-border criminal gangs. An anti-paramilitary strategy is being developed. There's £160 million more of resources for the police to tackle paramilitarism, and there's a new international monitoring body has been put in place as well to monitor paramilitarism.
Yeah. So exclusion isn't your preferred option
to make sure
now.
Exclude them
in August. Well, 6-7 months later, we're much better relationship with them.
I think that what we have got is a comprehensive, strong, comprehensive agreement hundreds and hundreds of millions of pounds being devoted both out of our own executive resources, but also coming from London and from the Irish government as well, to tackle this issue, because everybody recognises that paramilitarism is a scourge. You've got all the parties signing up to the strongest condemnation of paramilitarism that we've seen in any agreement. That is going into the Pledge of Office, and Sinn Féin are obviously party to that as well.
Let's talk, because it brings me into your current relationship with Sinn Féin, because some people would conclude that the DUP makes a very big effort to talk out of both sides of your mouth. And you start at Stormont. You say that the relationship with Sinn Féin is much better now. We see Arlene and Marty having photo ops at the White House. And then I see your campaign leaflets. At this election, keep Arlene as First Minister and stop Martin McGuinness. So which is it?
Yeah, well,
new partners in government or stop the bogeyman? Which is it?
I've got that leaflet in front of me. In fact, I've got my own election leaflet, which I'm going to leave with you because I think you are a voter in my constituency, Stephen. We make absolutely no apology at all. We understand the nature of politics in our community in Northern Ireland, that we have a divided society and that we're going to have to work together if we are going to make progress in this land, to bring jobs, to grow our economy, to get better education, better healthcare. But that doesn't mean that we compromise on our very different positions and our very different visions of Northern Ireland. You know, Arlene has a very clear vision for Northern Ireland, which is seen very clearly in her 5-point plan for Northern Ireland. She wants a strong and stable Northern Ireland. Sinn Féin have a very, very different vision for Northern Ireland. And we make absolutely no apology for highlighting to the general public and the voting public that they do have a very different vision for Northern Ireland, and they would take Northern Ireland in a very different direction if they were in the position of First Minister.
If just two people, says your campaign leaflet, in every 100 change their vote from the last Assembly election, Martin McGuinness could become First Minister. Keep him out, is the sentiment behind this. Keep him out of what? First Minister and Deputy First Minister? They have exactly the same power, don't they?
Well, I think that this is an issue which does come up on the doors. People are concerned about Martin McGuinness and Sinn Féin getting into the driving seat in government in Northern Ireland and becoming First Minister. You know, I think it is, we have a country where, even though there's a fragmentation in the unionist vote, there will still be a predominantly unionist assembly after the election.
Does the First Minister have more power than the Deputy First Minister?
I'll tell you what, if I came back here on the 6th of May after the election and Martin McGuinness was the First Minister, his party, Sinn Féin, had won more seats than the DUP. You and others in this building would be heralding this as a sea change in politics in Northern Ireland. This was republicanism on the rise, and clearly, the results will not reflect that, I'm sure, because the unionism will still be the biggest.
The question is, does the First Minister have more power than the Deputy First Minister?
Well, it isn't an issue of whether they have more power.
It's my
or
question.
Not. With
respect, about a politician answering a question?
With respect, it is not an issue about whether
it's my
it is
question,
more power
Simon.
Or not. It is the First Minister and a Deputy First Minister, which is denotes the seniority of one position over another. And particularly,
does it?
It does in terms of,
Arlene Foster's more senior than Martin McGuinness, is she?
Certainly in respect of, one comes before the other whenever people are being introduced or they're going to the White House. Internationally,
So they're not going to the White House as equal partners?
But they're certainly going to the White House together, and that's part of the job.
Are they equal partners when they go to the White House?
They're going to the White House together to do a job for the people.
You're
of Northern
ducking
Ireland.
That question too.
They're going to the White House or wherever they go to, doing their job for the people of Northern Ireland. But, right. particularly externally outside of Northern Ireland, the people don't recognise the subtleties of what might legally be the case. They will say, well, look, that's a First Minister and that's a Deputy First Minister. And
I'm wanting you to clarify for the record, so I'll go back to my question you ducked just a few seconds ago. I've asked it twice, I'll ask it for the third time, because this is important. Because, you see, you talk about all this in your campaign literature, which is why I want everyone to have clarity. Does the First Minister have seniority over the Deputy First Minister? Does she have more power? Yes or no?
It isn't an issue of seniority or more
it's
power
my question.
Or less power.
Why are you ducking it?
The issue in the election, I mean, this is an
say
election.
Say yes or no. Go this on. Is, be a politician is, that says yes
this,
or no.
Does the First Minister
have more power than the Deputy First Minister?
The core issue in this election is who will be First Minister after the election.
That's and the core issue, is it?
Arlene Foster or Martin McGuinness is the choice for First Minister. If you look at any opinion poll and you look at anything that is any of the commentators want to say, that is what the choice is coming down
wow,
to.
Wow, so that's the DUP's priority now, is it? Well, the it, core it, issue it is, in this election is who's the First Minister. So it's not saving our kids, it's not health, it's not education, it's not all. The core issue is a title for the DUP, is that right?
I've got a manifesto here, right, which for nearly half an hour now we haven't really talked about a terrible lot. But in this manifesto, it has a positive, well, that's from campaign material. This sets out a positive vision for Northern Ireland. Arlene has a 5-point plan for Northern Ireland, which is to bring more jobs, better paying jobs, protect family budgets, raise education standards, prioritise health spending and investing in infrastructure. Now, you can't do that unless you win the election. And that's what... So winning the election is important. I know there are some who want to create this mystique that winning this election isn't important. There is nobody fighting any election or involved in politics anywhere in the world who would tell you that not winning the election is something that is... Winning the election or not winning the election is an unimportant issue. It is a critical issue. And it doesn't matter about the... The issues that you're raising are not... The important issues in this.
Why are they on the front? Why are they on your election material then?
The issue here is
stop Martin McGuinness becoming First Minister.
The direction of Northern Ireland.
And you've just said the core issue is the title.
It is the core issue
in this election.
This issue comes down to a choice. And we have spelling that choice out very clearly for people in Northern Ireland. And people know that that is a choice. And that's what people are saying to me on the doors. They understand that this is a choice. And it is about the direction of travel for Northern Ireland for the future. And I'm pretty sure that if Sinn Féin won the election and Martin McGuinness was First Minister, that this would be heralded as some sort of sea change in Northern Ireland politics and utter change in direction. And that's what I and my party and Arlene and many other people in Northern Ireland don't want to see happen.
Okay.